One of the hardest things about writing the inaugural poem was not the actual writing of it, but to realize, do I love this country? What does that mean? And does this country love me back? And in a sense, the inaugural poem is a response to those questions, to say, we are all part of this narrative.
Welcome to Cambridge Forum, coming to you live for the first time from the Charles River Museum of Industry and Innovation in Waltham, Massachusetts, to celebrate how poetry fuels democracy. Tonight, we are honored to have with us one of the busiest and most beloved poets in America today, Richard Blanco. Blanco first sprung to international prominence in 2013 at Obama's second inauguration, when he became the youngest, first Hispanic and openly gay poet to read verse at a presidential inauguration. Since then, Blanco has traveled the nation and the world, pushing the powerful reach of his poetry to transcend the arbitrary boundaries of race, gender, age, nationality, and creed. The subject of his poems in this collection are diverse and wonderful, as rich, varied, and unexpected as America itself. I'm Mary Stack, the director of Cambridge Forum, and tonight, to explain how to love a country, it's my enormous pleasure to introduce the poetic ambassador, Richard Blanco.
As a son of a working-class Cuban immigrant family, and as a gay child and as a man, there is always and still is a little part of me that still feels I'm not quite American, right? That America, that to be an American meant to be someone like Peter Brady or Marsha Brady in my case, or the Little Beaver or whatever, and any of that sort of narrative that we're all fed as what it means to be an American. And it was always going to be some other little boy in some other little town that was an American. Well, as you can imagine, serving as presidential inaugural poet, or PIP, as I like to call myself, changed all that. The honor of being asked to write a poem and read it, a poem about America, and read it to all of America, really had a profound effect on me in many, many ways. For one, of course, it gave me a newfound place at that American table, so to speak. It made me realize that story, as a chubby little Cuban gay kid, that was part of the American narrative. And that American narrative included black beans, pork, and rice, and all the rest. That my mother's story as a woman who grew up in a dirt floor home in Cuba, that was part of the American narrative. That all our stories, really, in a democracy, e pluribus, I can never say that in Latin, I didn't take Latin in high school, but out of the many, one. The idea that in a democracy, the ideal that we're reaching for is that all our narratives matter equally, and that no one narrative is more important than the other, or at least that's what we're working for. And I guess the inauguration also taught me that America is still very much a work in progress, right? And I think we get impatient sometimes, as we may be in this day and age, we get impatient and thinking, oh my God, like it's not happening, or it's not happening the way we think it's supposed to happen, but that really we're cathedral builders. America, if you really take a historical look at it, it is really still one of the most amazing social experiments in history. And for history, 250 plus years is nothing, right? We're still trying to figure it out. And I think that kind of spirit is part of what I've always carried in my heart, part of what I want to do in this book, is the idea that that narrative needs to continue. But also we need to step up to that narrative. We need to be part of that democracy. We need to participate in it. We need to keep on writing that narrative for ourselves, for others who can't write it yet, because it's all part of the story we're still writing. Granted, a narrative that has largely been ignored, prejudiced against, outright like denied, but nonetheless, it's a work in progress. And on that note, I'd just like to begin sort of to take us back to what I think the first idea of that started happening for me was in the inaugural poem. Because one of the hardest things about writing the inaugural poem was not writing it. I mean, I can write a poem in a week, you know? Like, but not the most important poem in my life. But the idea was, the hardest part was not the actual writing of it, but to realize, do I love this country? What does that mean? And does this country love me back? And in a sense, the inaugural poem is a response to those questions, to say, again, we are all part of this narrative. Whether we know that or not, or acknowledge that in our daily lives, it is true. And it is the ideal, it's not an ideal that we're living exactly, but an ideal that we're all still striving for. So I'd just like to take a begin by, as a point of departure, to take us back to that moment in on January 21st, 2013, as if I could ever forget that date, right? And let you see how that sort of grew into this book. This is a little preface that's from the inaugural memoir. It's called For All of Us One Today, An Inaugural Poet's Journey, that sort of gives you the psychology or my psyche as I'm sitting there waiting to be called up to the podium. In the moment, I feel America standing as one, putting differences aside and taking a deep collective breath. We pay tribute to something far bigger and more important than any one of us, and I truly feel like one of us, one of we, the people, in the echoes of the president's and others' speeches. I embrace America in a way I never had or thought I could, feeling for the first time that I belong, truly belong to one country. Not an imaginary ideal from TV or a nostalgic Cuba floating in the sea of my parents' memories, but a real tangible place that is mine, was mine, all along. Senator Schumer introduces me and calls me up to the podium. My mother squeezes my shoulder. I stand more confident than I imagined I would or could be, transfixed by the moment that it's no longer about me or my poem or my glory, but about our country. Still, I'm surprised when the president and vice president stand up to greet me and shake my hand on the way to the podium. They both whisper something in my ear that I can't make out. But their gracious gestures speak silently to my heart, silently, as if saying, Richard, here is your country. This is your story. Here, your home. I step up to the podium, look out over the crowd, a patchwork quilt of lives, of stories spread across our ground, under our sky, beneath our one sun. I take it all in as I take one deep breath, and then another. This is for them. This is for us, for all of us. I think to myself, and begin speaking into our wind. Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, America, one today. One sun rose on us today, kindled over our shores, peeking over the Smokies, greeting the faces of the Great Lakes, spreading a simple truth across the Great Plains, then charging over the Rockies. One light, waking up rooftops, under each one a story told by our silent gestures moving behind windows. My face, your face, millions of faces in morning's light, crescendoing into our day. Pencil yellow school buses, the rhythm of traffic lights, fruit stands, apples, limes, and oranges, arrayed like rainbows, begging our praise. Silver trucks heavy with oil or paper, bricks or milk, teeming over highways alongside us, on our way to clean tables, read ledgers, or save lives. to teach geometry or ring up groceries as my mother did for 20 years so I could write this poem for us today. All of us, as vital as the one light we move through, the same light on blackboards with lessons for the day, equations to solve, history to question, or atoms imagined. The I have a dream, we keep dreaming, or the impossible vocabulary of sorrow that won't explain the empty deaths of 20 children marked absent today and forever. Many prayers, but one light. Breathing color into stained glass windows, life into the faces of bronze statues, warmth onto the steps of our museums and park benches as mothers watch their children slide into the day. One ground, our ground. Rooting us to every stalk of corn, every head of wheat sown by sweat and hands, hands gleaning coal or planting windmills in deserts and hilltops that keep us warm, hands digging trenches, hands routing pipes and cables, hands as worn as my father's cutting sugar cane, so my brother and I could have books and shoes. The dust of our farms and deserts, our cities and plains mingled by one wind, our breath. Breathe. Hear it through the day's gorgeous din of honking cabs, buses launching down avenues, the symphony of footsteps, guitars, and screeching subways, the unexpected songbird on your clothesline. Hear squeaky playground swings, trains whistling or whispers across cafe tables. Hear the doors we open for each other all day saying, hello, shalom, buongiorno, howdy, namaste, or buenos dias. In the language my mother taught me, in every language, spoken into one wind carrying our lives without prejudice as these words break from my lips. One sky since the Appalachians and Sierras claimed their majesty and the Mississippi and Colorado worked their way to the sea. Thank the work of our hands, weaving steel into bridges, finishing one more report for the boss on time, stitching another wound or uniform, the first brush stroke on a portrait, or the last floor in the Freedom Tower jutting into a sky that yields to our resilience, one sky toward which we sometimes lift our eyes, tired from work. Some days guessing at the weather of our lives. Some days giving thanks for a love that loves you back. Sometimes praising a mother who knew how to give or forgiving a father who couldn't give all that you wanted. Still, we head home. Through the gloss of rain or weight of snow or the plum blush of dusk, but always, always home. Always under one sky, our sky, and always one moon. Like a silent drum tapping on every rooftop and every window of one country, all of us facing the stars and hope, a new constellation, still waiting for us to map it, still waiting for us to name it together. So that poem has become, I guess, in our day and age, a little bit of more of a manifesto, of a reminder of, and I want to say it's also like, you know, it wasn't like at the inauguration we had it all together either, right? Again, it's a work in progress. We need to step up. We need to continue to writing that narrative together, looking, mapping that constellation together, naming it together, right? The White House actually asked me to write 3 poems for the consideration, and they picked one today, obviously. And for the third poem, I turned to my mother's journey as an exile, as an immigrant, coming to understand that she's more of an American than I could ever be for that journey. She left her entire family behind in Cuba. By that I mean her parents, her 8 brothers and sisters, her every aunt and uncle, every niece and nephew. And we always understood that sense of loss and longing, and I had never understood that incredible act of faith and what it meant in the context of being an American. And so I think immigrants and why America continues to strive and be part of a just such a great country is because of that immigrant influence that actually reminds us of what our ideals was. Are you lose and you give up so much as an immigrant, and you come here and you hold that country, you hold the country up to a certain bar, right? And so this poem sort of asks us to look at that perspective through my mother's eyes, through my mother's emotional shoes. In a way, she was the one who should have read that poem in Washington, D.C. to that crowd instead of me. Mother country, madre patria. To love a country as if you've lost one. 1968, my mother leaves Cuba for America, a scene I imagine as if standing in her place. 1 foot inside a plane destined for a country she knew only as a name, a color on a map, or glossy photos from drugstore magazines. Her other foot anchored to the platform of her patria, her hand clutched around 1 suitcase, taking only what she needs most. Hand-colored photographs of her family, her wedding veil, the doorknob of her house, a jar of dirt from her backyard, goodbye letters she won't open for years. The sorrowful drone of engines, 1 last deep breath of familiar air she'll take with her. 1 last glimpse at all she'd ever known. The palm trees wave goodbye as she steps onto the plane. The mountains shrink from her eyes as she lifts off into another life to love a country as if you've lost one. I hear her. Once upon a time, reading picture books over my shoulder at bedtime, both of us learning English, sounding out words as strange as the talking animals and fair-haired princes in their pages. I taste her first attempts at macaroni and cheese, but with chorizo and peppers. And her shame over Thanksgiving turkeys, always dry, but countered by her perfect pork pernil and garlic yuca. I smell the rain of those mornings, huddled as one under one umbrella, waiting for the bus to her 10-hour days at the cash register. And at night, the zzz, zzz of her sewing her own blouses and quinceañera dresses for her grown nieces still in Cuba, guessing at their sizes. And the gowns she'd sell to neighbors to save her rusty white sedan. No hubcaps, no air conditioning, sweating all the way through her first vacation to Florida theme parks to love a country as if we've lost one. As if it were you on a plane departing from America forever. Clouds closing like curtains on your country, the last scene in which you're a madman scribbling the names of your favorite flowers, trees, and birds you never see again. Your address and phone number you never use again. The color of your father's eyes and your mother's hair, terrified you could somehow, someday, forget these. To love a country as if I was my mother last spring, hobbling, insisting I help her climb all the way up to the U.S. Capitol, as if she were here before you today instead of me, explaining her tears, her cheeks pink as the cherry blossoms coloring the air that day when she stopped, turned to me, and said, "You know, mijo, it isn't where you're born that matters. It's where you choose to die. That is your country." So, thank you. So anyway, read a mom poem, you gotta read a dad poem. My dad lost in a different way. My dad, as a man of that generation, right, who was supposed to provide for his family and like had all these plans set out, suddenly all that was just blown apart. But he also gave up a lot, just like my mom. He gave up a lot for the sake of the American dream, the quintessential ideas that we all need to come back to. We all need to remember those if this country is going to survive. So this is part of what this poem is saying, but mostly it's a poem of thanks and gratitude for my father. So this is one of the more autobiographical poems in the book. My father, in English. First half of his life lived in Spanish, the long syntax of las montañas that lined his village, the rhyme of sol with his soul, a Cuban alma that swayed with las palmas. The sharp rhythm of his machete cutting through caña, the syllables of his canarios that sung into la brisa of the island home he loved and left to spell out the second half of his life in English. In the vernacular of New York City sleet, neon, and glass, and the brick factory where he learned to polish steel 12 hours a day, enough to save enough to buy a used Spanish-English dictionary he kept bedside like a Bible, studied 50 new words after his prayers each night, then practiced them on us the next day. Buenos dias, indeed, my family. Indeed, mas café. Have a good day today, indeed. And again in the evening, gracias to my bella wife, indeed, for dinner. Hiciste tu homework? Indeed. La vida es, indeed, difícil. Indeed, did indeed become his favorite word, which, like the rest of his new life, he never quite grasped. Overused and misused, often to my embarrassment, yet the word I most learned to love and know him through. Indeed, the exile who tried to master the language he chose to master him. Indeed, the husband who refused to say, "I love you," in English to my mother. Indeed, the man who died without true translation. Indeed, meaning in fact, en efecto, meaning in reality, de hecho, meaning to say now what I've always meant to tell him in both languages, thank you. Gracias for surrendering the past tense of your life so that I might conjugate myself here in the present love of this country. In truth, así es. Indeed. This next poem speaks to another kind of immigration story, namely the U.S.-Mexico border. If there is a border, it's 800 miles wide, and it's a region that's shared a history, a culture, a people for many more hundreds of years before this country ever even became a country. Clearly, this is part of our history. It has nothing to do with immigration. It's part of who we are. And if you talk to some, you know, I've been in San Antonio for like, so it's one of my favorite cities where I spent so many time. It's a whole different consciousness of what that really means. It's an issue that keeps on getting twisted and twisted and twisted. I've lived in Guatemala. I'm from Cuba. I have a different perspective than many Americans do. And the reality is that it's a global issue. It's not just a U.S. issue. It's a global issue. It's an issue of migration. It's an issue of destitute people, of people that are just seeking freedom. People are just seeking to survive. And our countries don't cooperate because at the end of the day, nobody wants poor, destitute people in their country. And like, and okay, I'm like running for office now, but the reality is it's a long standing of the history of manifest destiny, and it goes back all that way. And it's like, and it's just this archaic idea of national borders, which are becoming less and less relevant in a world where we realize that cooperation and connection is the only way we're going to survive. So the only way I could solve this was to let the river speak. I was meant for all things to meet, to make the clouds pause in the mirror of my waters, to be home to fallen rain that finds its way to me, to turn eons of loveless rock into lovesick pebbles and carry them as humble gifts back to the sea, which brings life back to me. I felt the sun flare, praised each star flocked about the moon long before you did. I breathed air you'll never breathe. Listened to songbirds before you could speak their names, before you dug your oars into me, before you created the gods that created you. Then countries, your invention. Maps jigsawing the world into colored shapes, caged in bold lines to say you're here, not there. You're this, not that. To say you're yellow isn't red. Red isn't black. Black is not white. To say mine, not ours. To say war. And believe that life's worth is relative. You named me, Big River. Drew me, blue, thick, to divide, to say spick and Yankee, to say wetback and gringo. You split me in two, half of me us, the rest them. But I wasn't meant to drown children. Hear mother's cries, never meant to be your geography, a line, a border, a murderer. I was meant for all things to meet. The mirrored clouds and sun's tingle, bird songs and the quiet moon, the wind and its dust, the rush of mountain rain, and us. Blood that runs in you is water flowing in me. Both life, the truth we know, to be one. In one another.
You've been listening to Poetry Fuels Democracy, a Cambridge Forum event at the Charles River Museum of Industry and Innovation in Waltham, Massachusetts, with poet Richard Blanco, who's speaking about his latest collection of poetry, How to Love a Country. Cambridge Forum is sponsored by the Lowell Institute, the Cambridge Community Foundation, and the Massachusetts Cultural Council. Thanks for joining us, and please do so again.